All right, so welcome to RMOC for March 11th, 2025. Thankfully, we're getting some rain today, which is awesome and always welcome. So we are in the process of making sure that all of our committees just have some structure and follow ground up, and this kind of goes smoothly. So what we're going to do is I have some agendas and rosters printed up behind me. And I'm sure I've emailed all of you at this point about updating the RMOC roster and designating an alternate if five. So for sake of the recording, we're just going to ask that members of the roster introduce themselves. And then after the fact, if you wanted to provide a question or comment or something like that from the general to the public, a non-roster, non-committee member, if you can just introduce yourself before your question or comment for the record. I guess we'll start down here. So I'll start with you, Elizabeth.
Sure. Should I use the microphone?
There's mics underneath the table. They should be able to pick you up, and Billy will let you know if.
Okay. The microphones are resting on the table. Those are the ones that people on Zoom can hear. The ones that are sticking up, that's just the room audio.
Got it. Okay. I'm Elizabeth King. I'm with the Coachella Valley Mountains Conservancy, and I'm joined here with my alternate, Brent Felsted, who's with the CVDMRCA, which stands for.
Coachella Valley Deserts and Mountains Recreation and Conservation Authority.
Woohoo! That's us.
Thank you. Stefan?
I'm Stefan Allen with California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm in the lands program for our region.
Thank you.
My name is Tommy Teixeira. I'm with Friends of the Desert Mountains, and I'm their land administrator.
My name is Tony Q. Rose. I'm the alternate for Kathleen Brundage, who is the administrator for the CVMSCCP, representing Coachella Valley Conservation Commission.
Yeah, hi everyone. Jacob Scans with CDFW. I'm the CVMSHCP lead for CDFW.
Hi everyone. I'm Solon Watts. I'm the associate biologist with the Coachella Valley Water District.
Hi everyone. Lori Salazar. I'm a wildlife biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Lynn Sweet. I'm with UC Riverside Center for Conservation Biology, and we do work on the MCHCP. I'm here with alternate Scott Peacocks, who's also with UCRCCB.
Thank you. All right, so we got introductions out of the way. Now for announcements from staff, I'm going to. Sh
Online to introduce.
so the way that teleconferencing requirements work under the Brown Act is if you attend via teleconference and you're a member of the roster, you have to post your location and make it accessible to the public, which needs to be part of the agenda that goes out at least 72 hours before the meeting. So we didn't receive any of those for this meeting. So anybody who attends via teleconferencing is just attending as a member of the public. They can still ask questions and discuss items when we allow for public comment. So with that, I'll go ahead and share my screen. I do have all the slides here with me. We've got a pretty packed agenda, so I'll try to move fairly quickly with some of these items. And then allow a little bit more time for some of the more in-depth presentations that we'll have from some of our audience members today. So let me just share this. All right, so announcements from staff. We are in the process of developing some working groups. The first one is going to be a mesquite restoration working group. I'll wait for Billy to share the screen there. There we go. So the mesquite restoration working group is part of the inclusion of Mission Springs Water District and Desert Hot Springs into the CVMSHCP. Part of that requires that we develop a restoration plan for mesquite hummocks along the fault line in South Desert Hot Springs, North Palm Springs. December of 23, we had a mesquite restoration workshop that UCR helped us put together, and we talked about some of these issues and brainstormed some ideas as to how to go about this habitat restoration. The next steps are going to be to get identified members who want to participate in this group to get together, work with Mission Springs Water District on a restoration plan, and move forward with how to best go about restoring this community here. So, I'll be reaching out to our mailing list, looking for people who are interested in participating in this working group. The other working group is the Burrowing Owl Working Group, and that is a very important project that we've got going on. IID currently is working with CVCC to coordinate our efforts, and they are planning to do a region-wide survey of burrowing owls in IID territory, which is Imperial County, starting very soon, like within the next couple of weeks. And around our around summertime is when they would have those biologists come over to the Coachella Valley to do the similar surveys in our neck of the woods. And this would include protocols, scheduling dates, figuring out encroachment issues for conservation landholders, and identifying survey locations. So all of this will be discussions for this Burrowing Owl Working Group as well. So we will also be reaching out to you all for interest in or participation for this working group. And then if that wasn't enough working groups, we have more working groups coming. The reserve management unit plans are exactly that. They're plans for how to manage our reserve management units. Well, the Coachella Valley Multiple Species Habitat Conservation Plan has 21 conservation areas. In the plan, they're grouped up by reserve management units into six different reserve management units. So this is a map of what that looks like. Some of them might have multiple conservation areas. Some of them might just be a single conservation area, like Reserve Management Unit 6. It's large enough that we don't need to group up another conservation area into it. The Reserve Management Unit plans are all on our website, and the purpose of them is to kind of come up with a shared understanding of how to best go about managing these areas. And those were created and finalized in 2012. So it's been a very long time since we've updated them. So we would like to go forward with this group here and anybody who else who's interested in updating maps, land ownership, actions taken, best strategy moving forward, reviewing science and literature to incorporate that into these new plans. So what the best strategy would be for moving forward with this would be to split up these reserve management units, or to split up our group here into reserve management units and have people focused on updating these plans individually as separate working groups. So what we'll do is, again, reach out to you all. And I have a list of, you know, which reserve management, which conservation areas apply to which person. So for example, CVWD, absolutely, you know, Dos Palmas and Sonmar Channel. Maybe not so much Santa Rosa San Jacinto Mountain, but you guys have land there, right? So I have some of that stuff already laid out, and I can reach out to you all and see if you want to participate in this big endeavor, which will be a fairly large undertaking. So much so that for the rest of the year, we're proposing that we hold off on having this collective RMUC meeting and instead focus our efforts on this working group and the Burrowing Owl and the Mesquite Restoration Working Group. So we would still meet in a different fashion for the purpose of either updating the plans, coming up with a mesquite restoration plan, or adding insight into the Burrowing Owl Working Group. So with that, that's a lot of information. Anybody have any questions, comments? Yeah, Elizabeth?
Those working groups would still report to the RMOC?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So this committee still reports to the RMOC. Mm-hmm. So anything that comes out of that still needs to go through and get, you know, oversight from the RMOC.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So...
I have one online hand question.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Tony, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Hey, this is William with the Coachella Valley Water District. I just wanted to comment on a couple of the items that you brought up. The reserve management unit plan update. that's actually good timing for Dos Palmas. And we're actually, the CCLP parties that are working out at Dos Palmas are actually putting together a long-term management plan and long-term O&M plan. One of the key components of that is to look at the management of that area in the long-term and look at the different parties involved. I actually forwarded this meeting invite to some of our other agencies that are involved out there at Dos Palmas and would like to attend and possibly be on this agenda later in the year. So I just wanted to mention that as an outlook and looking forward to kind of getting involved with Dos Palmas and the CBCC sometime this year as it kind of works into your plans. It's good timing.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and thanks for including us in those meetings as well with the CCLP. And yeah, it sounds like what you guys are doing at Dos Palmas is very much what the ARMUP intends to do as well. So aligning those plans would be very helpful.
I had one other question just about the Burrell Working Group. Do you have an idea of the timeline and the goals and objectives for the Burrell Working Group?
I'm not that well versed in the goals and the objectives, but the timeline I know is expected to be like mid-summer. I think mid-June, I think, was when they were thinking, but that all depends on how fast they're able to go through the Imperial County region. But I can get back to you, Will, with more info.
Okay. I guess, you know, I'll ask some folks that are there, they may know, but is this related to the candidate species listing for Burrell Owl and the subunits for Coachella and Imperial counties?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Okay. So I suppose then there's the October deadline for the anticipated the review. Maybe just a suggestion is to maybe put a little context on the next agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when I reach out to everyone for the working group, I'll make sure to include a lot more context as well for exactly what the objective is of the meeting.
Thanks, Tony.
Yep. Is that it for questions on Zoom, Billy? Okay. All right. So next, some great news. CBCC was awarded a few different grants. The first one was to create a MODIS tower array in the Coachella Valley The first one was for a small mammal genetics study for using environmental DNA or eDNA to understand genetic flow that's happening throughout different linkages in the Coachella Valley. These are some of the proposed sites. The purple crosshatch is modeled linkages in the plan, and then the dark blue clouds are habitat suitability for Palm Springs pocket mouse. And we're also including the Coachella Valley round-tailed ground squirrel as part of this study to understand how well these linkages are doing at allowing for genetic flow through through these infrastructures. So we'll be working with UCR's genetic genomics lab to get samples and analyze some results. This is a 2-year project. We're in the process of finalizing the agreement, and we'll start work on this once we get that agreement finalized. Yeah, go ahead.
Just to make it clear, that's not this lab. Anyone was wondering. You want to talk to me about genomics?
Yeah, UCR is a big organization, and we're working with Dr. Brian Jennings on that. The second one is for $94,000 for MODIS Tower Array. MODIS is a wildlife tracking network, as you see in the photo on the left, that in conjunction with these tiny little GPS tags that can be put on small mammals and birds, even there's literature showing that they've used this on butterflies in some areas. These are helpful to understand migratory behaviors and habits for species. The CVMSHCP has about 12 different species on there out of the 27 that that can have their movement tracked with MODIS. So we're looking forward to being able to kind of get some of this information. And tags that are installed by biologists throughout the world on some of our species can be data that we collect here locally. So we don't even have to tag some of these species to get valuable information out of it. So we're looking forward to that project here. Here's proposed locations in the orange dots of where we're tentatively planning on putting these. We're working with Southern Sierra Research Station, who is very well versed in MODIS networks, to help us in the process of site identification, installation, consultation, troubleshooting. Here is a viewshed analysis of how far of a range each tower would be able to pick up at about 20 feet. So we did our best to focus on areas where we know that there are high densities of riparian species and linkages. And then we also are trying to see if these can be effective in tracking burrowing owl movement, which would explain that site in the Willow Hole Conservation Area over by Desert Hot Springs, since we hope that we can catch some of burrowing owl movement there. And then last but not least, we did get notified that we received $500,000 from CalRecycle to do an illegal disposal site abatement program.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's an awesome project. These are the map dump sites that we know of so far. This is in the Upper Mission Creek Big Morongo Canyon Conservation Area in Desert Hot Springs. And this will be for 2 years worth of funding. A lot of it would go towards dump site cleanup, disposal fees, towing of vehicles. And then we're also trying to incorporate flock cameras, which tie into law enforcement surveillance systems, to use these to try and protect conservation land. So identifying appropriate locations for these where we can see people illegally dumping and then get the police notified for enforcement very quickly is something that we are going to try and do. And then Will's conservation rangers will also be incorporated into this project, doing patrols once we do clean up some of these sites.
Cool.
So with that, I guess I'll open it up to any other questions, if anybody had any questions, comments about those last couple of items.
How many MODIS sites are you going to propose?
We proposed four.
Four.
Yeah. And so the funding will go towards paying for the equipment, paying for the consultation or with the contractor. And that's most of the money there is tied up into those two things. And the data would be open data on MODIS.org would get stored up there.
Can you hit all of the 15 dump sites with that CalRecycle money?
Yes. What? Well, that's what we're planning on.
Yeah.
You know, when we budgeted for it, you know, we tried our best of trying to see if we can get all of this funding. I'm expecting in a perfect world, we clean it all up and then we have money left over for future cleanups, because realistically, there's going to be more dumping after we clean it up. So I'm hoping that we can get it quickly and clean these properties up and have a contract with our junk removal team for 2 years and then just pay them to go out and take care of it quickly.
That's great.
Cool.
Yeah, just kind of like a general question here for anyone. Is anyone here using MODIS tags on any captures or attaching, or know of anyone that is over at the UCR? I'm just curious if there's anyone local that's been using it. Or
I know that Boyd Deep Canyon Research Station had a temporary MODIS tower. And from what we heard, I think last year they didn't have it anymore. I think they're considering getting another one again.
Okay.
But the biologist there seems fairly knowledgeable on MODIS.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just curious if there's anyone locally that's suing any tagging or.
We have one at the Imperial Wildlife Area and one at San Felipe Creek Ecological Reserve.
Nice. Yeah, Lori?
Tony, you mentioned, I think, 12 out of the 27 covered species can be tagged with the MODIS tags, right? Are you planning on all 12 of those, or are you targeting specific species?
No, realistically, we won't have funding to trap and tag all of them. But there are a couple of species that we haven't been able to get very consistent data on, like riparian birds, that would be helpful. We did do trapping of the western yellow bat a couple of years ago. That would have been a great opportunity had we had this to try out tagging as well. It wasn't the purpose of that study, but those are instances where once we have a permanent structure, if we do have some of these adjacent projects, we might be able to kind of like leverage this resource and pay for a tag. The tags are only about $250 each, depending on the type that you go for. Some of them can last up to like 3 years or so. So it's fairly minimal cost if you wanted to tag them. Getting the biologist to go out there and be permitted and get the mist net up and tag or trap them and then tag them, that's usually where most of the money goes towards. So hopefully, as we move forward, we can just add a little bit of funding and get some MODIS tags on them. Okay, anything online, Billy? No, okay. All right, so next is member agency reports. This is an opportunity for any member of the roster to provide an update on anything that their organization is doing or working on or information that could be good to the group. So I'll just open it up to anybody who wants to provide an update to the rest of the YARMUC. All right, well, that sounds easy. Okay, Billy.
Okay, thanks. Hey, Tony, I'm just interested to share some information on illegal dump cleanups. We have some stuff going on in the Coachella Valley that we've seen get exacerbated, I guess, pretty quickly in the last year or so. And you're probably going through bid processes and finding contractors and things like that. So you may have narrowed it down. I was just curious, how are you planning to complete those illegal dump cleanups with local staff? And is that something that you would be able to share?
Yeah, I can definitely continue to provide updates on the process. The plan for now is to develop two different RFPs, one for towing services and the other one for illegal dump site cleanup, including hazardous waste removal. And the reason why those are separate is because vehicles are treated differently. They're not, they still have to go through a process being held at the tow yard and notify the owners. And so there's a bit of a process with the vehicles. So we're going to separate those two. And then that's kind of how we're going to go through with the initial cleanup. After that, we're going to work with UCC on fencing a particular property. We're not going to fence all of the 1,284 acres. Our funding wouldn't cover that. And this grant particularly didn't allow for that much funding to be used on these kinds of preventative measures. It only allowed for 25%. So we're using, we're piloting the security cameras for 2 years to see if this could be effective. And if it's not, then, you know, we will just end the pilot project at the end of the granting period. But I will definitely report back to the group on how this is going and, you know, lessons learned. All right, so Okay, so now we'll move on. I'll provide a quick update on 30 by 30. This is a study to understand the effectiveness and the usage of the existing undercrossings of Interstate 10 and Highway 111. We use different methods, including tracking plates, wildlife cameras, paying for a tracker, taking measurements of sound and light that are coming from the road, understanding the, or taking surveys of the perennial vegetation that exists 100 meters out from each side of the undercrossing. And these are some of the sites that are currently being surveyed to give you a spatial understanding. This study is currently being led by UC Davis. CVCC is the grantee, and Billy's been leading the tracking plate effort. We're almost done wrapping up our field studies for this project. All of this field data will go to create some recommendations that will be fed to an engineering firm who will actually design what's called a 30% design for potential new improvements to existing infrastructure or to new infrastructure for Caltrans to incorporate into their future projects. So right now we're in the process of developing the RFP that will go out at the end of this month to choose an engineering firm who would create this 30% design. And at the same time, UC Davis, UCR, CVCC, and all of these different partners are finishing up all of their data collection to incorporate in this engineering design. So it's a really cool project. So far, 40 species have been documented going through and using these underpasses, which is just really great. And there's a lot of different components that are being addressed here. So I'll provide the group with more information as the project moves on. But with that, any questions?
Do you have any examples of the species?
Well, desert tortoise was documented, which is really cool. Mule deer, which I didn't expect.
Wow.
Feral cows, which I also didn't expect. roadrunners, coyotes, bobcats, a lot of different species.
That's great. I have a question as well. So this 30% design would be specifically for one project, right? For the Cactus City Rest Stop project.
No, it would be for these underpasses that are being surveyed.
For all of California, right? For Caltrans? Or you're talking about they would incorporate the design, Caltrans would?
Yeah, so it would get you, a pretty good initial step into the finalization of a future design that could be incorporated in this pass, the Banning Pass area. Mm. I think the information is still valuable regardless of where you are, but considering the biodiversity and the differences in geography, it is important to, highlight that this data is being collected here and it would be best served for these specific undercrossings. Mm. But I'm sure you can incorporate, some practices across the state and across the country if you really wanted to.
So who's implementing this project then, I guess, is my question. So is it Caltrans that's behind funding and they're doing an undercrossing?
The funding is coming through DBMC, if I'm remember correctly, or CDFW, sorry. So it's a 30 by 30, it's a state initiative to protect 30% of the state's diversity within 30% of the state. And so the funding came through this 30 by 30 initiative. It's technically CDFW who's holding the funds, and that's who is the granting agency in this case. Caltrans would be the beneficiary in the 30% design that they can incorporate in their infrastructure.
Okay.
We don't own their infrastructure, so it would ultimately be their ability to incorporate this into their design.
Okay.
I know. Oh, go ahead.
And again, these points here, these are areas where these findings could influence the design, or is this where data is being collected?
This is where data is being collected. Yeah, so you'll see obviously along the infrastructure, and then some of these sites are away from the infrastructure. These are considered background sites to understand also which species are using the habitat away from the infrastructure to be able to see that compared to what's actually using the infrastructure as well. Billy?
Yeah, Carrie. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, this area winds up being right on the westernmost edge of Desert Tortoise Range, and I'm wondering if you could share the lat long for the locations for where the tortoises were observed, just to make sure we can incorporate that with some modeling we're doing right now.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll reach out to the field team for those coordinates, and then share them over with you, Carrie.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I'm with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so you can pass them on to Lori as well.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
I love the idea of sharing this with Caltrans, because I know the Santa Monica Mountains overpass, they did take all the information that was learned from that study and incorporate it into their statewide specifications and designs. So I know that they're really open to this kind of information informing future projects. So I think it'll be really helpful.
Yeah. We're actually meeting Caltrans this week before the RFP goes out, just to make sure we're incorporating as much of it that can benefit them as possible. Cool. Okay. All right. So now I have an update from UCR on alien sand community and a couple of other items on the agenda. So Lynn.
Do I need a microphone?
Maybe. The little circular one.
Right.
Yeah, that one is the mic that's active okay. Right now.
Right. So I'm here with staff. Scott Haycox, Rachel Gallardo, Remy Vincent, and Melanie Davis. That all was here. Yes. And so Remy has been doing the alien surveys for us and is going to tell us about our results.
Okay. Got this one. Okay, next one. All right, so in the fall we do perennial plant surveys and vertebrate surveys. As you can see from the photos, we still had a decent amount of silt flats on the refuge, and then a lot of dead annual habitat or dead annual herbs, which did provide cover for animals. You can see on the corner picture there, that's actually a rattlesnake underneath a dead shrub. We did have a lot of like big Decoria canescens and some perennialized milk vetch, the endangered Coachella Valley milk vetch, because there's still a lot of water that gets stored in the sand dunes and also the silt flats. Unfortunately, the weather was really wacky this fall for tracking. It was either too hot or windy, and then it got cold really all of a sudden, and we couldn't do sufficient tracking surveys for the lizards and small mammals. And that's all I have to say about the fall surveys. Next one. Is that the next one? Okay.
This one?
Yeah, sure. Currently, we're working on the giant sand treasure cricket surveys. You can see the burrows on those two bottom photos. And then we started scouting for Astragalus tricaranidus, which lives in the like canyon sides near Mission Creek and Big Morongo. I think those are the little San Bernardinos. You can see we found a couple of dead waifs from last year, and then just us like looking with binoculars to see if we can see any of that perennialized in Mission Creek area. And then we are also tasked with
creating new plots out by Snow Creek and in the Whitewater floodplain near Genoxy on some of the new, more newly acquired CBCC parcels. And then the next one, I just threw this in there. This is what we're doing for the I-10 corridor project. We created a 100 meter radius approach to the underpasses because that was what was needed for like whether or not animals would use it, especially big mammals. So we're getting we're doing a rapid assessment. We're getting the density of different species and then the height of them by plant form, so like shrub, tree, annual, to kind of assess how good it is for mammals to use those habitats. We finished our fall winter ones a couple weeks ago, and then we'll do a resurvey at some point in spring. And those are all my updates. And then Lynn will talk about something else.
Yeah, thank you, Remy. And to add, for the triple rib milk batch for these Dragalus tricarinatus that is present in the Little San Bernardinos and also the San Bernardinos and in the Santa Rosa Mountains and then supposedly in the Chihuahua Mountains, although we don't know. So we will be searching for them. And because they do perennialize, you know, they tend to like grow in the first year and then basically flower in the second year. So we're hoping that we can still find some that are detectable. You know, it's not an ideal year to survey for anything, but we've found some dead wave individuals, which were down in the washes, which, you know, at least encourage us in terms of being able to detect something that tells us about the species this year when we're funded for it, desert biology. So that'll be ongoing. And then I wanted to add, so for the I-10 project, we're basically going to just summarize the veg data. So we're working on that to give to UC Davis to then like relate to whatever animals they're seeing. So that's sort of our part, pass on that data.
Yeah. You mentioned that you found in your fall surveys water at a certain depth. How deep was that?
Oh, I just because the decoria canescens were like massive in like the silt flats, we didn't actually take any data on how deep it was. It was just by how big the plants still were, had grown over, especially with how hot the summer was. We were making an assumption that it retained the moisture, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, is this I-10 corridor of vegetation survey, is this focused mostly on the western side of the plant or some of this on the east?
It was the same location that we shared in the map. Yeah.
Got it. I guess it was western.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we are collecting aerial imagery of the different plots that they're using for their surveys to provide that data to the group as well. We're about a third of the way through photographing all of them. The challenge with that area is it's so windy. And so we can't fly the drone over like 20 miles an hour. And that part of the country is very, very windy. So finding time to do it is a little bit challenging. But once we're out there and the wind is nice, it only takes about 5 minutes to do a single plot. We just have to move to the next one, that image, that data will be able to, we fly about 100 feet and then stitch the photos together and then create a geotiff file for ArcGIS to overlay with the map. And so all of that data, including the site, the sound and light data and vegetation data, all of that's going to be combined to create recommendations for that project. CR. So you guys provided an update for the vegetation. Did you guys have anything to provide for the and rolling sand, anything for climate resiliency?
Click the buttons.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, so just in brief, and we tried to be terse with all of this so that we could, you know, there's a lot on the agenda today. So, but essentially that's our climate resilience project with CBMSHCP. So that is to try to look at climate vulnerability for covered species in the plan with relation to the plan boundaries. This is a project that is lag funded or was lag funded, maybe it's even 2022 and then it was funded like 2023 or so. So a while back, but coming due this month. So essentially we've created some models of current suitable habitat and projected that onto future potential suitable habitat for species, subspecies. And then that we will produce some conservation summaries and management recommendations. So,
sorry about that.
Yep, that's it. This is methods. I showed this at the HCP National Conference in December. But essentially, it is using occurrence data. You know, creating a Maxent model, tuning that. This was my two of my postdocs actually did this. We have some bioclimatic variables and ran it with a CMIP-6, so like one of the newer projections. And HADGEM, which was shown to be a solid model for that reproduced climate in the desert area, and then three RCPs, which basically means like low emissions, medium, and high, and then 20-year periods. So I'm just going to show you a snippet of data as we're finalizing it. Is there one slide in between by any chance? No. Okay. All right. Is there a slide right after that?
Yeah, we got lower and then moderate.
Oh, weird. Okay. All right. Well, I don't have the species listed, so I want to be sure, but this is just an example of some data that we produced. But essentially, the occurrence data is in the blue dots on the upper left. Focus on the upper left one. Occurrence data in the blue dots, and then we have the MSHCP area, and then we have the suitable habitat, which is either kind of reduced to like a yes or a no, in the green. And then you can see the conservation areas in pink. So again, it'd be better if I had this animated like originally and we could look at it. But essentially you move from the upper left to the right hand and you can see that green area start to shrink. And that's the suitable habitat. And then going down to the left, the next scenario, 2061 to 2080 and then 2080 to 2100, excuse me. And so seeing that shifting habitat potentially kind of into less within the conserved area. So that's not what we hope happens, but that is what we are looking to predict if it is helpful. So hit the forward button. This is an example of some graphics that we will produce, of which there are many, because you can imagine they were like, three different RCPs and like five different time periods and so forth. So hit the next button, please. This is an example for at least of a species here. So Coachella Valley milkvetch, looking at the current suitable habitat, blue dots, and this is like continuous suitability for right now modeled. And then from the warm colors into the, that pinker color. Actually, sorry, from cool colors back to the warm colors, excuse me. And then go to the next slide. This is just an example, moderate emission present. And then the next one I think should be the model scenario end of century for like a moderate scenario. So just an example of how we can use the two pieces of information, species, the suitable habitat and conservation area to hopefully help the MSHCP understand where to manage for these species. There might be another slide. Okay, and this is another graphic that we're producing. And then this one, and I apologize, I took these out of a different presentation and didn't do a very good job putting them in order. This is potential desert tortoise habitat within, I think this is just straight up area going from the present time on the left to the future on the right and under those different like low, moderate, and high scenarios. So how much area is covered within the, I think that's just the general plan boundary, from now to the end of century. So graphics like this will be produced. And I think that's it. Maybe one more. Okay, and the CV milkfetch, same thing. I realize, yeah, so looking at this one, this is why we're still, going over results. I want to be sure about that right arrow there, but
the way the newer climate projections work, it's not necessarily like a linear path, just like temperature goes up by 1 degree and then 2 degrees and then 3. That's why they produce, you know, dynamic models for every time period. So supposedly we gained some habitat at the end of, you know, the century under one of these scenarios, which is interesting. We should look at that. But so that's, yeah, just another example of what we'll produce and double check our data, of course. Again, this is why it's draft data. Please don't cite it. So keep going. All right, and that's just the thank you slide to those who participated with, yeah, getting data, putting it in the system, et cetera. So that's like Luis, Hector, and Melanie. And Clay's not in the picture.
I think we have a hand raise from Carrie.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, thank you. Really interesting work, and I think it's very important that we model out how we think habitat's going to move in terms of temperature changes. But I think it's also important that we acknowledge that temperature is not the only thing that's going to dictate the location or the extent of a species, either ecosystem or niche. And so I just caution, I've seen this in desert tortoise world, where folks try to make absolute calculations about future habitat, and I think we're being a little bit over-optimistic and assuming that all the habitat that has the correct thermal envelope is also going to have all the other characteristics that we need for these habitats. So just something to keep in mind. I'm sure you guys already are, and you're probably just not saying it because of this presentation, but it's something that's starting to come up more and more as more of these climate projection models get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. Yeah, there's things like predators. There are things like roads. There's barriers, all sorts of things that are not in these models that are just climate. The Earth is not flat. We know it's not flat. You know, it's not a perfect sphere either. So topography, all of those things. Yeah, so the bioclimatic variables do cover like precipitation as well. I just can't remember if we put soil in here, but yeah, there's many other factors. We have a paper in review with the desert tortoise model, actually, that is trying to just, and it was working with Jeff Lovich and crew to look at, at the southern range extent for desert tortoises, where's the future suitable habitat, where's the current suitable habitat, or excuse me, that's just the current suitable habitat, and what's the, and then where's that covered by like roads and threats to the tortoise? So that paper is designed around identifying where they still are, like what are the threats there? So hopefully that'll come out sometime. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, are there, based on your preliminary analysis, is there any particular covered species that we're particularly concerned about? In terms of their vulnerability to climate change. I mean, it seems like basically all the suitable habitat is being pushed up further and further into the higher elevations in the plan, which is basically the proposed, the reserve assembly, which is around the edges, right? They're being pushed out of the valley, mm-hmm. It seems.
Great points. That is what the trend of what we see, for sure. Just due to the impacts of climate change. We have not modeled all the species. This was like a first project, you know, for us to be trying this approach, and we hope to, if it's successful and the, you know, partners think it's useful, we could try to model more species. So we just modeled a handful for now. I can't say which one is more. We're still like, I wish we had more time, but we do not. So we're trying to get this to the finish line. So I can't make any final statements now.
Sure.
But thanks. Shortly.
Any other questions, comments?
No.
All right. So let me screen share again. Just a sec. So part of the responsibilities of the Reserve Management Unit Committee is for the group to go over potential biological monitoring priorities for the next year. This is a process where, you know, UCR provides, as our technical advisor or scientific advisor, they provide, you know, updates on their surveys and also recommendations for the following year. This committee can provide input on what we should prioritize, and then the CBCC drafts a budget to try and incorporate all of these different priorities for the next year, and then we'll propose that budget to the Reserve Management Oversight Committee before the end of the fiscal year. The Reserve Management Oversight Committee then gives their okay, and then that is, you know, the number that we move forward with for the next fiscal year. So I've asked Lynn to provide just kind of some overall, you know, topics, discussions, ideas, suggestions on what we can prioritize for next year. So Lynn, would you like to?
Sure. I have a small little show up here. So many of you have seen this graphic over and over, like every year. This is the MSHCP. These are the species on the left and communities, and then that, and then the sort of the species are like the, you know, sub lines under each like category. So the top is like plants and communities, invertebrates, reptiles, birds, mammals. So to be clear, UCR does not do all of this monitoring, but these are, you know, working with Tony and others to set priorities. So so the species are listed. So I could just read them, I guess. So milkvetch at the top, CV milkvetch, we have Little San Bernardino linanthus, and then you can see, by the way, the gaps in years when things were not monitored. So maybe, Tony, do you want to express which species need to be monitored every year in that kind of context?
Yeah, so you'll see some of them that are monitored every single year. The first one is the milkvetch. That's part of our alien sand community, which has to be monitored every single year. So you'll see that the Coachella round-tailed ground squirrel at the very bottom, Ponsonby's pocket mouse, you'll see some of these trends of these being surveyed every single year, and that's part of our permit for the MSHCP is to do that every single year. Some of the other ones that are surveyed every single year are ones that are done by CDFW, so that's Peninsular Bighorn Sheep, that's Desert Pupfish. CDFW has the monitoring responsibility for those, and those happen every single year outside of our funding. So that will explain why some of those are hit every single year. The other ones are really kind of where we have to try to strategize and make use of our funding as much as possible.
So you can see, some of the species that haven't been monitored in a while, and I think I have more information about the things that we're thinking about in the next slides, but this is 25-26 in the last column, including the things that are automatically monitored and the things Tony, you know, knows are being handled, and then some proposals in yellow, but, you know, these are ideas. They probably will not all come to fruition. So things like linanthus, San Bernardino Mountains linanthus, a triple rib milkvetch potentially, I'm not sure. Oh, palmoises. There, that's a covered community. Jerusalem cricket, again, hasn't been monitored in a few years there. Then we have, so Birmingham will be apparently, mm-hmm. Yes. And then crystal thrasher is an idea. So the riparian birds were not covered for a couple of years. So you all know about this stuff too. And then for mammals, it's, you know, automatically our alien sands community, which is part of our protocol. So yeah, CV round-tailed ground squirrel, Palm Springs pocket mouse. And that's not via trapping, that's just tracks. And then PBS as well. So I'm sure Tony can provide you with a copy of this. It goes into the annual work plan that everyone sees. So I'm going to go to the next slide, I think.
Yeah.
Or we can come back to this, Tony. You know, Tony, we've discussed like some different themes. So one is focusing on the reserve resilience. So, you know, the lands that we're, you know, CBCC is investing now in to really manage really well, that are part of the reserve. I can't speak to the land management and what that looks like in the future for different types of lands, but, you know, lands that have been conserved and we hope that will be conserved for perpetuity, focusing on those. So some questions that we could ask scientifically, you know, their degree of functionality as corridors or refugia. So, more work like we've done with climate resilience. Resilience is specifically to increase storm events. So, like the ones we've been seeing. So, not just climate change, but actual, like, threats due to like hydrology and so forth, disturbance of the wildland urban interface, the efficacy of management actions as well, you know, that's maybe a topic some of other partners work on too, and the type and abundance of biological resources, because
So we do our monitoring protocol in the alien sands on our long-term sites, but there are many other sites. So making sure that maybe CBCC and then this group has a solid idea of biological resources throughout. So ideas to discuss. Maybe I'll just go through them and we can have discussion on all of them. What do you think, Tony?
I guess if you want to propose some ideas and then I guess unless there's anything really pressing that members here of the committee want to bring up as a point of discussion. If not, we can just have UCR provide their initial thoughts.
Going once.
So let's hear some proposed focuses then from UCR.
So in particular, Coachella Valley Milk Vetch, I think the service is working on a special status assessment. We've been giving information as we can to, Mary and USGS for that. Melanie has been looking at that species for a while and had some ideas around essentially more searches and longevity. I don't know if you want to say a word about that, Mel.
Yeah, so it's included in our ongoing monitoring efforts. We do sweeps of counts. We don't generally capture demographics, population demographics, or recruitment in the species. So I would like to tag individuals, not physically because it's an endangered plant, but geolocate individuals throughout the season and track sort of survivorship throughout the season. Our surveys happen at a time when we document a lot of seedlings. I'd like to better understand how many of these seedlings actually survive to reproduce. And like Lynn mentioned, sort of understanding, we've done range-wide assessments of the species. Unfortunately, the year that we were funded to do that was one of an incredibly dry year. So always just trying to document the extent of the species throughout the valley to better inform our models is always a goal.
Yeah, and that's one that doesn't really persist very well as a perennial. So it's in the sands, especially. It's very hard to find in a drought year. So finding a good year to do that would be great. Okay. Scott, do you want to say something about Jerusalem crickets?
Sure. So there's several questions I've always wanted to investigate more about the Jerusalem cricket. One of the main issues preventing me from doing that is land ownership and being able to look for them in places that I would like to look for them, which are on private land, which I can't do. So Katie and I, when we were out looking at some of the new plots we're putting in whitewater floodplain, talked about the possibility of basically trying to do a fairly consistent string of cover board monitoring sites, which is basically just putting plywood boards out in the desert, and the crickets like to go under those during the day, and so we can go out during the day and flip them and see if they're there. That's kind of our main method of determining occupancy. They've been assumed to be extirpated from probably at least half of their original range due to development and, increased aridity and temperature, and basically being pushed out of all the way from Palm Desert and Palm Springs all the way back up toward Whitewater and Cabazon is where they're now only currently found. So as far as I know, no one's really looked though to see if they do occasionally come back down into the Whitewater floodplain. So I want to put a chain of monitoring sites down there and try to get a better idea of their easternmost range extent so that we can more accurately track if they're contracting or hopefully expanding. The other things I always want to keep an eye on the Snow Creek population because that's kind of the center of abundance and it's really important. If that's compromised, then that can be pretty scary for the species. It already has an extremely restricted range. The last time I was monitoring them, I suspect there might be some poaching or something happening in that area. There is very clear methodical tampering of some of the coverboard sites, and at one of the densest populations, I didn't find a single cricket the whole season, which is troubling. So I want to go back there and see if they come back, hopefully, or if there's any more evidence of something foul going on. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
And I'm assuming we're on the same page. This is the covered species, Coachella Valley, just Jerusalem cricket, not just all of the Jerusalem crickets, to be clear. Mm-hmm. So you might find some in a different location, but this is particularly our endemic species talking about. So thank you. Another proposal is a flat-tailed horned lizard, just considering, you know, so we've been monitoring them on our long-term aeolian plots in, you know, sort of a silty fringes, you know, sand silt interface maybe in our various plots. There are some other, which poses a, you know, a challenge in years when there's less sand because we're using tracking surveys. We can use visual sightings as well, but, you know, just considering some updated survey or other survey methodology to better understand range and dynamics. So Katie had mentioned, I don't know, a CDFW protocol. So potentially that could be used. And then the long-term aeolian plots, you know, as the climate changes and the landscape structure changes due to all sorts of things, you know, maybe infrastructure, hydrology, all sorts of things, how we're changing the landscape and it's changing, you know, how well are, you know, long-term sites, aeolian sites reflect, you know, how well are they giving us information that we need to understand the patterns of abundance? So we'd love to do is like a reanalysis of how representative each site is in terms of its like vegetation community and characteristics, so we can better do like statistical analysis of the abundance data across the valley, because we have our plots running east to west. So reevaluate our sites to improve that. That would probably just be extra work along with our aeolian monitoring and provide recommendations. We did have a student or who now graduated looking at the sand community, plant community, which is cool. She wasn't focusing on any covered species, but she used our long-term annual plant community data to look at the relationship between brassica booms or Sahara mustard booms and then native community abundance. So once that's out, we'll share it. So questions, or I think I have a couple more slides.
Yeah, questions on anything presented on this slide? Because I know there's a lot to take in from folks from all the different slides. So,
Scott, I was wondering about your Jerusalem crickets when you have the, did you say plywood boards?
Plywood boards. Yeah.
What kind?
Plywood.
Plywood?
Yeah.
Do you think they're trying to get other types of reptiles? I mean, like lizards instead of crickets?
Yeah, there's, you know, that area of the Whitewater Canyon and Snow Creek is really popular for herpers, and people definitely do take things from out there.
Did you get any lizards in your survey?
Oh, did I get them? Huh? You mean, do I see
them? Did you find some?
Yeah. Lizards, not as much as occasionally snakes, especially shelving mosses, like to go under those. Probably eat whatever bugs are under there, small bugs. I think that's, shovel noses are kind of the only ones I typically see. In other areas, in sandier areas, we get iguanas too.
Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like we have someone online.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I was thinking along the lines for the flat-tailed horned lizard. We've developed a couple of different pitfall-less arrays that use camera traps, and they're working really well with reptiles. We're doing some of that in Washington State with whip snakes, but we started that project on solar facilities to try to look at the alpha and beta diversity before and after construction for lizard communities, particularly with the I-10 corridor. So if you guys are interested to dig into any of that methodology as a potential way to automate your flat-tailed horned lizard monitoring, there's a potential there.
Very interesting. Okay, we'll follow up. Yeah. Our primary monitoring is on the the Fish and Wildlife Service National Wildlife Refuge. So we'd have to work with them for sure. But we do have cameras that Rachel was just going through and making sure they were all functional. Thank you. Okay, we'll follow up.
I'll move on to the next slide.
Yeah. And just a time. The other items, you know, there's the Mesquite Working Group, so that's just, you know, a covered community that would be worked on intellectually, you know, with the working group. So we put that on there. Palm Oases, we had a proposed project that we proposed to BLM last January. This was the National Conservation Lands and CLS or whatever science, whatever grants. And it sat on a shelf for a year or so, and then maybe it was funded and then maybe it was not. And then it's, yeah, probably never going to be funded now. So we had proposed to work, and Melanie designed a project, just in the interest of time, I'll just say, to work on, botanical surveys and all sorts of documentation for those sites. We can definitely dive into this topic more, Tony, if you'd like. Introduction of invasive species, so we think those are important. Do we want to focus on that a little bit more, Tony,
right now? Yeah, I think it's worth talking about, right? Because I know, you know, I spoke with Tommy about what Friends of the Desert Mountains doing on with Agua Caliente, and it sounded like there were some parallels. It was interesting to learn about what they were doing and then learning about what you guys have proposed. If you could expand a little bit about what that project would entail, I think it'd be beneficial.
Yeah, and we had developed that, and we had certainly Friends listed as partners, and then we did speak to Margaret and the tribe about their project at the time. So we had developed them independently, and then we both realized, oh, we're going to work on, you know, Palm Oases. Mel, do you want to say briefly more?
Yeah, this originally came about, you know, working with the San Jacinto Santa Rosa National Monument. Danny Ortiz was interested in an inventory of the oases. There was over a decade ago, our previous boss, Cameron Barrows, did an inventory of the springs, but this would specifically focus on Palm Oases health. And given that a lot of our oases that occur along the fault line are within the conservation area, and they've been recently threatened by fire, I wanted to expand it to not only be the national monument, but also the conservation area. Well, you know, both in the same, all the overlap there. So this inventory would include a condition assessment of the oases, recent fire recovery. There are some newly introduced non-native species within the Santa Rosa, San Jacinto National Monument, grasses in particular. And so seeing how introduced species into these riparian habitats affect local biodiversity, and not only how that affects on floristics of those local sort of riparian hotspots, but also overall wildlife. And then also a couple questions in there about there's concerns about the effects of the palm borer beetle, but just sort of exploring what sort of questions we can answer about the effects of the beetle on the oases. With the BLM lands grant being on some shelf somewhere in Washington, we all still think it'd be very interesting and important to explore these questions within the oases along the fault.
Did I forget anything in there?
Also local hydrology and shifts in climate, how that affects the condition of the oases.
And just to add that, if you're talking about the same palm beetle I'm thinking of, that's not a pest beetle.
No.
It's a beetle that naturally lives in the palm oases.
Yes.
So
there's some
Not worried about it having a negative effect on the palms. Just if they are also affected by it.
Also affected the beetle itself, and then theories about dispersal of oases through like birds dispersing the seeds, the smaller dates, and if the beetle sort of follows that, and seeing what kind of questions we can answer, seeing as it's somewhat understudied.
Do you anticipate any kind of like issues with land access, given that so many of them might be within tribal lands or BLM lands?
So we were working with the tribe. And so they had this sort of concurrent study going on, and we wanted to, instead of both working on our own projects, work together on it and sort of help provide information on whatever we can provide on information of local plants, but deferring to how the tribe wanted to survey and monitor their oases. But there's a lot of much smaller oases throughout the monument that occur primarily on BLM lands.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that was, you know, a project written for BLM, so that would have been supported by that. I don't anticipate, hopefully, issues with that. But,
sure.
And it was developed within respect to, like, you know, the National Monument, right, funded by BLM for that. And then we had worked with Tony last year and actually made it into this work plan that we could potentially, you know, like, expand the project into reserves covered here and then work on ownership with, you know, the reps that own land in the broader valley.
Yeah. So. And, you know, going through, you know, the classic means of asking for access to lands, I don't anticipate those who have palm oases on their lands to not want to do this. It's not, this kind of work isn't installing anything permanent. I would potentially want to collect vouchers to represent in the area to show the floristics of these regions, but there's no long lasting damage of the surveys we want to conduct. So I don't anticipate too much pushback on any of that.
How many oases do you think you would study?
That's a great question. I will say, we did write this grant over a year ago, so I don't know if I have a number.
But it's all written up.
I don't have a study.
For the BLM land, at least, when, because I'm doing the Palm Canyon Trail survey, and that goes across Agua Caliente and BLM land. So if you do anything on BLM land, you just have to have that permit from them, which took us like 3 months last year to get it. So I don't know how long it would take you guys to do it, but it was pretty easy. It's just
and we work closely with them.
Okay, cool.
I think, and part of it was exploratory as well. I mean, you have to also define what an oasis is, how many trees makes an oasis. One of the interests was an actual inventory of the oases. Managers with BLM sort of wanted a better idea of where their oases were and how they were doing. So this included also sort of data mining occurrences for riparian areas and using satellite imagery to look for those oases. So the number is actually part of the project is to find out how many there are.
For the data that Tommy's team is collecting, is any of it complimentary to what you're looking at?
I was going to invite Tommy to say more.
I was thinking,
me and Tony talked about for the next meeting that I can try to create something like how you guys do to present. We have like so far like 12,000 data points, but we originally started, like, the scope of the project was a lot different than what we boiled it down to at the end of it. So I can kind of talk about that as well, like where we started and where we kind of ended. But we only have like one, like less than a mile segment left on it. But we originally were going to do like a quarter mile off to the sides, which makes enough sense. I think going up.
Yeah, it's hard to define an area.
Yeah. So we just have kind of broken it up with anything like touching the trail. But it sounds like what we were doing is like a segment of it. So it's pretty easy to do left or right side of the trail. But with what you're doing, it's going to be more like quadrants or whatever. So
yeah,
it'd be a little.
The type of data that you're collecting.
We're just doing it on like iNaturalist and photographs. And then once we upload it to iNaturalist, our volunteers or people on the iNaturalist platform identify. But it's just because we do it that way. We don't have our volunteers identify the species specifically, just to let them move through the project a little quicker. Because they're hiking like 5 or 6 miles some days.
And this is documenting all species along the trail. And then you guys are using that data for like special interest in use species.
For the tribe specifically, they were wanting the data. Originally, they wanted it to identify like culturally significant areas. So if there was mesquite in an area, to see like what other vegetation was around that concentration of vegetation as well, to indicate like culturally significant areas that could indicate like this is where food was grown or tools were used. And kind of, they were doing cultural resource surveys at the time as well, so they were using, the idea was to use that data to influence where they would find
more artifact potentially.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, and we were, you know, also interested in being able to contribute to that kind of data set outside of the lands that you guys were working in, you know, of course, because Indigenous people were all over the mountains, not just where they are now. So, yeah, being able to also sort of understand how you guys are taking data and contribute to your data set too.
Yeah, we've just been really focused on collecting, not necessarily processing
the
data. So, but we're almost done with our first data set. So hopefully we'll have a little bit more direction in the next few months.
Yeah. Will your grant cover the processing of the data or just
It was just the collection of it. But I think the tribe was, we were just going to hand it off to them to let them do. And also this was the first time that the tribe has ever conducted their own survey. So it was like 50% getting the data and the other half was like tribal ownership of that data as well, because all prior data sets belong to BLM for the Palm Canyon Trail. So it's like really like data sovereignty. And we tried putting it on the ground, but BLM didn't really, that wasn't important to them. So it was a little harder to get that across. But
yeah, I think, you know, we were in conversation with the tribe, and then it was sort of like, okay, when we hear about the funding, because, you know, we were quite sure that was going to come through, we will set another meeting, and then,
yeah.
No comment.
Yeah. It's really hard. But we have a lot of volunteers. That's like what we had, like, probably 40 people sign up for it, so I've been assigning different groups of people different sections, but if you guys need help on the bodies part, maybe help with that.
And vice versa, you know, it was something that we were aware of what was going on because the tribe was like, oh, y'all should do that. And all right, thank you.
We'll
talk more.
It sounds like, I mean, I think from a land management standpoint, I think having an idea of what the oases look like and what like fire risk they might be going through would be helpful for us to identify priorities and maybe have a team like Urban Conservation Corps go out and, you know, take care of some of this like invasive species removal in areas where we know that it's priority. But that all comes with site control, and you know, it's a lot easier for us to do that when it's CBCFC who owns the land or if it's FREM, but it might be more challenging if it's a federal partner who owns the land. So, but I definitely think the data would be useful since we did have so many fires 2 years ago now in some of our palm oases.
And that's why I wanted to include the ones that, you know, as this was originally written through the lens of BLM, I was like, it would be important to include CBCC in the conversation because of the recent fires that have occurred along those fall oases.
Right. Yeah. I know. I mean, Solon, like with the Dos Palmas, you know, that there was a big fire there.
It was, last February.
Yeah. So, and you guys have seen pretty good recruitment come back. And
we have, overall, it's been pretty good, you know. But, you know, there's also, you know, there is some, you know, staff down there who tries to pull tamarisk and everything. The palms all came back, you know. I saw pretty low mortality just anecdotally. But you know, so it's really the incoming of invasives that, you know, is my concern personally after a fire. And then obviously, you know, the damage to all the springs and well sites that are still undergoing the repair process. But but overall, I mean, most of the palms I saw that were over 2 feet tall pretty much all survived. So, you know, it's just that loss of the petticoats and all that, you know, potential bat habitat and everything, you know, that's just not going to come back.
Sure. Yeah, to be clear too, fire in oases is not how we usually talk about fire in the desert as sort of this. We still talk about suppression of fire in the desert. In oases, there's a lot of there's a lot of data and literature to back up that it's beneficial even to the recruitment of palms. So that's something I'm interested in looking at. We do, though, have oases that have burned at very short intervals. So sort of how that also affects it, like time interval and burning. But that's cool to hear about those
ones.
Okay, I guess we can move on to the other couple of proposed ideas from UCR. Do you want me to move on to the next slide?
Well, the last one, I'll just say I checked with our colleagues at CDFW and BIOS in terms of the vegetation map. So just the highest elevations of the reserve, lack of vegetation map, just to point that out. So when we're doing projects like trying to get an idea of like above ground biomass and carbon for like CBMC or the state, we really need detailed vegetation maps. So there is currently, it's not one. So this is just a quick screenshot of the CDFW map of maps showing where we have vegetation maps. And so you can see there is a gap in the upper part of 73. So we can move on, but I just want to throw it out there. If it came up that there was funding to do so, that needs to be done. The last map was the PBS habitat map by Aerial Information Systems, AIS, along the 73 polygon. Okay, we can move on.
Yep.
Alluvial fan, I'll just say Little San Bernardino Mountains Lenanthus. It is a hard species to predict when it's going to come up, but in a year, if there's funding to work on it, we have to plan it now. This is like the state fiscal calendar or whatever, or the CBCC calendar. So there are other things we can look into, like modeling or some other things. But see, things that need to be worked on is how AOHB and invasive species threatening Little San Bernardino Mountains Lenanthus. Has the rain shifted? Recent hydrologic events, like where are the presences still, are they still present in these alluvial fan shoulders? And was the pollinator, or what are the pollinators? And then crystal thrasher, I just thought was interesting because if you're working on mesquite, there's a nexus with mesquite there, because, associated. So bird that could be worked on, but I'll defer more discussion about the birds. That might be the last one.
I had a comment on the Lenanthus, just that, we haven't done surveys for Lenanthus, since after Hillary, and so much of that habitat was drastically changed.
Yeah.
So it is a hard one to get like range-wide abundance for, but just seeing how Lenanthus habitat has changed since Hillary, I think is pretty important.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Very good. Very good points. And then just following up on the I-10 work, if that was of interest as well, just more about the corridors and dispersal, because it's not just, enough animals, plants, invasive species, ecosystem functions, not a super specific project idea there, but sure, as you move into the later phases of that project, you'll have more that could be followed on.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Elizabeth?
Can we go back to the slide that shows the 27 species?
Yes.
I read the studies that were done on the Western Yellow Bat, which is at the bottom. I believe they were back in 2012. And at the time, the status of that bat was of high concern. Is that something we should look at again, or did the more recent studies show that it made a comeback?
The final report, the final study for that one came out, it was finalized in like 2023.
Okay.
And for the most part, they were pretty common. Out of all of the different bat biodiversity, they were like the third most common bat that they found or something like that. So, overall, it was fairly good news. Now obviously they're subject to, the presence of a nice skirt on a palm oasis, and if that keeps burning, then, they're losing their habitat. But as others mentioned, fire in oases is pretty common occurrence, and they can come back from it. We did find some good news with the Western Yellow Bat.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good. General question. What's the process for finalizing these work plans? And does this eventually get the work plans get drafted and then they're brought to RMOC?
Exactly.
At some point, what's the timeline?
Yeah, so the UCR will work with us on finalizing the work plan. We'll finalize the budget, and that will be presented to RMOC, which is 3 months from this. April,
And so RMOC will review, provide their final inputs, and then that's what we'll move forward with.
Bonnie, just a note. So we don't weigh in on the budget for other items, though, just to be clear.
Yeah.
We develop our own scope of work for things we can work on, but we do not
develop
the budget.
So UCR, just like any other contractor for us, will provide their own budget that they'll propose for some of these items that are designated to them. Some other work might be happening, but some of that might be done by a separate biologist or different organization. The budget that we will present to RMOC will incorporate what UCR gives us, but it will also highlight other work that's being done by UC Davis on I-10 corridor studies or by a burrowing owl biologist. All of that will be included in the RMOC budget.
Well, let's see. Would this be the last time for the RMOC participants to provide input, or are there other opportunities to review draft work plans and provide input?
So right now, we're really just trying to get some guidance from the RMOC on what these what should be considered, so that we can kind of start developing this work plan. Members, I mean, these are all still public meetings. So as we present this to the RMOC, you can still provide, comments one way or the other. Even if you're not a committee member of that RMOC, you can still provide your comment and suggestions on the work plan, on the budget, because it is a public meeting. So this isn't the last time that you get any kind of input on it. It's just the first time. So this is the start of the process here. Mm-hmm.
And one last question. I guess this is for the UCR folks. As you, it seems like a lot of these are good ideas, kind of a mix of species focused and then natural community focused questions that are important for the plan. And right, the ultimate goal is we're trying to create sustainable populations of the covered species. And also this monitoring helps inform adaptive management through time, right? So it seems like these are a lot of good ideas in my opinion. Where do you get these ideas from? Are they kind of based on your reading of some of the plan sections or your understanding of the species that are struggling based on your the surveys that you folks have been doing on behalf of CVCC?
I'd say all of the above, and then hearing about the other research in these meetings and other meetings, and then particularly like the end of season highlights in terms of things to be followed up on, questions, and so forth. And then certainly the things we've worked on, we've been reviewing that literature for a very long time. So we look at our end of year reports from last year or the last time we worked on things, and where do we pick up and go? And then, speak to Tony and Katie and and certainly open to other ways of adding input.
Yeah, and UCR provides helpful recommendations at the end of every section of their annual report.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good to keep documented so that we can pull that language for moments like this and say, okay, based on the previous research, what did they say was a recommendation for moving forward? And let's take a look at how we can kind of devise a good strategy moving forward from there.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks. Certainly if it was the most pressing need, the most imperiled species, that'd be great. But we live in a desert that's very difficult to detect everything in every year, the funding priorities, synergy with other projects going on. I think that's great that this group works to produce efficiency from synergies like, a Palm Canyon project that could be in two places. I think there's more to it than just ranking the species like vulnerability and then saying the top 10 will get monitored this year.
Got it. Yeah. Thanks.
Any other comments or questions? Is there anything in particular that you guys think we should, prioritize? Because I know a lot of this, we still have to kind of find the details and formulate a budget out of that. But if the committee here said, for sure, focus on this thing, that can be something that we'll, make sure gets done. There's going to be a lot of work that you guys are going to do for us that they have to do for us, like the Olean Sand Community Surveys, but some of those extra, tasks are important as well.
I think I agree with Jacob's point that it might be helpful, even if we couldn't base the recommendations off of a ranking of most imperiled species, to at least know what that ranking is.
Okay.
So that would look like sort of how we're basing that decision, or sort of pull out past reports where that was a concern of ours too.
Or I would just like to understand with these 27 species, what their vulnerabilities are at this time. And I don't know if we have that information, but I think that would be helpful for this group. And I don't know if that's hard information to get.
I mean, it's tackled in many levels by different, I think, agencies and so forth here. I mean, there's the original plan documents, which laid out the, the sort of guidelines, right? And so certainly we operate off of those. All of it could be updated and done maybe in a more systematic way, but it depends. Are you like IUCN, ranking, or a CFW ranking? Or it's hard. I would say it's hard to compare these objectively for that. Certainly, I don't know. And we definitely rely on institutional knowledge from, like, especially Katie, who's been around for quite a long time in terms of kind of the rotation, when things are even able, how often you can get even funding to monitor some of these things.
Right.
It's just a consideration.
Right. Yeah. And I think we also try to couple existing resources or projected future resources and try to really maximize how much we can get for our funding. So if we know that we're going to invest, or we're going to get this resource like burrowing owl surveys, we might try to expand that scope a little bit with some of our funding, so that we just get more bang for our buck. And that might be the case for mesquite or for some of these other species. So even though they may not be the most imperiled, this opportunity presents itself, and then we try and take advantage of that. Then we also have, CDFW's part of surveying our peninsular bighorn sheep, populations and our, pufffish populations. Our riparian species riparian birds have not been surveyed in a couple of years. We hope that the new MODIS network, even though it's, only going to be set up this year, that will now allow us to track any existing birds that are already tagged that fly through the area. We now are collecting their movement data. Now it isn't a super targeted, we're going to do summer tanager this year, but indirectly we could, right? So a lot of those species ideally would be checked off as we're surveying these now, which would be really great. I think, for the sake of time, I think we had a helpful discussion. It sounds like a lot more questions to answer, but there was a lot of really good suggestions. I definitely want to follow up on the palm oasis stuff. Maybe we can talk more about that, and maybe see if friends can provide us some input. But that would be really interesting. And I know that the uncertainty of federal lands access and things like that are something to consider, but at the end of the day, they are huge landowners in some of our conservation areas, so we should try to work with, BLM as much as we can. Okay, any final thoughts on this agenda item here for priorities? Okay, hearing none, we'll go on and move on to the Living Desert, who has generously provided, or is going to provide, an update on what they've been doing for early detection and rapid response. Dr. Luis?
Our team has been following up with a few tasks to support the CCC. So mostly Shane has been leading this effort. So during the last, since the last time that we report, so we continue with some of the seed collection for several species. Up to now, the combined amount is we already have almost 7 pounds of seeds that are, and some already being in propagation. We can show that one a little bit later. Next. So here we have already some mesquite willows and smoke tree that is being propagating our, at the zoo. These will be going in the field, I guess, in another year and a half. They're still, as you see, they're in the 4-inch spot, 2-inch spots. Yes. So they still have a way to go to grow to a size that will have a lot more success when we transplant. Next. So also, we start doing some tamarisk removal with after Hillary, as you mentioned, the whole system in Whitewater Mission Creek had changed and a lot of seed removed. So we start doing the pulling from most of those tamarisk is still fairly small, and we have been planning. We already finish those two sections, the red and the green. Once past the yellow, there will be a good area that can be cleaned for in the same way. But farther down, I think that we will have to recess because those are the willows that are more established. They will not be pulled. They're already an inch, 2 inches, so we will not pull those things. We will have to use herbicide and things, and once we get to that point, we will need more coordination with CBCC. Yeah. Nick. These are some of the days that we went to get all those willows out. Next. And this is the monitoring of fountain grass. There's some areas that were actually were just like some single plants growing here and there, and but we were able to identify at least a few where already a patch is. It's getting formed, and that was in January. It's kind of like example of the situation that we have seen. It's mostly in the drainages, and that is I think that close to the one of the middle schools and the elementary schools there in DHS in. Painted Hills and Bella Vista Elementary. So that is another effort to start controlling the stignet and pointed grass and some extra seed collection. Even that we have been able to collect quite a bit of seed, we still need a little bit more. Next. So these are the areas that we have already been treating for stingnet. Right now, yesterday, our team went just to check, and it's already coming back in some of the areas. We are thinking of because what we have been doing in the past is just pull plants. And we are kind of like brainstorming some ideas to try to hit them earlier before, but earlier is also difficult because you don't have enough to pull them or treat them. So we are brainstorming some ideas to try to cover more area, hit them a lot earlier. And my guess is this rain will come with a lot of blessings and some others that will not be as much. Next. So that is some of the areas with what we have been removing the Sting and Mission Creek and Willow Hole. And it's our team doing it. You see, it's a very tedious work. I think that my team thinks that we are just mean sending them to do that. But it's part of the deal. Next. And this is some of the species that we still have to collect. We have been monitoring how the seed production is going. It's too early to harvest, so we're just waiting. But for example, we still need like 2 pounds and a half of incilia, 3 pounds of cheese bush, and just 1 pound of sweet bush to. At least those are the goals that we set with CBCC. My guess is that we will have to, once we have the seed, revisit and see how things are looking.
Yeah, and just for context, this seed collection effort is part of the Casey's June Beetle restoration plan that is tied to CV Link going through a piece of Casey's June Beetle habitat. So it's actually separate from the CVMSHCP. But it's something that we're coordinating with through CBAG, and not so much as CBCC.
It's like
Yeah.
And at the end, like we will have most likely more seed that we need, maybe, or we will learn very well to collect all these. And because we are in the same transfer zone, these seed can be used. Even if we end with another 20, 30 mesquites or any other of the trees, that those could be assigned for other restoration efforts in the area.
I just want to commend the early detection rapid response to a couple of these spots where you have purpose to net, in particular the Mission Creek. That was a day of where she and I went to one spot. We had word of the Mission Creek snake net. We were able to pull it that day. In addition to that, the Willow Hole one was one that was identified by UCR, Remy and her team. While they were out there, they were able to get the information to us, and then within, I think it was a week or two, we were able to go out there and pull it. I visited the site last month, and no new recruitment statement was there, and only a few very tough, difficult to see seed inflorescences were still there that we missed. That area is really tough because you also have a lot of rabbit poo that looks like inflorescences. So I was just a wonder to be able to spot stuff that wasn't rabbit poo. So just definitely great job so far with that. And then the open communication is crucial for making sure that happens. So I appreciate that.
Any questions, comments for Living Desert? All right, well, thank you. So now we'll move on to enforcement. So we have Will. Will, would you like to take mic?
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to get through this pretty quick. So Will Steichen, the Conservation Ranger Coordinator for the Coachella Valley Conservation Commission. Next slide. Here is a timeline of some of our key target dates that we're hoping to meet. So a year ago, we were awarded the Climate Resilience and Community Action Grant from CVMC, and by the end of August, they brought me in to start developing the Ranger program. The last time I spoke with you all was in December, and at that point, my primary goals were to engage all of our partners, which are landowners, land managers, ranger programs, enforcement agencies, wildlife agencies, and social service agencies for the unhoused individuals living in the desert. The other thing that I updated you on in December was starting to draft an ordinance that our rangers can cite against. So I want to go to the next slide, Tony. Mm-hmm. So the draft ordinance, we've completed our first draft, and that is with the group CBDMRCA, who right here has got their shirt on. So that's between the Coachella Valley Mountains Conservancy and Desert Recreation District. That's the Joint Powers Authority. So they're our main working group on building up this program and building the ordinance. Thankfully, we were able to work with Santa Monica Mountains Recreation and Conservation Authority, who back in 2022 built out a similar ranger program that spans multiple jurisdictions. So we're relying on pretty heavily for the structure of the organization that will house the program, as well as building out the ordinance and best practices. At this point, we've drafted an ordinance. We've gotten feedback from internal partners as well as CDFW on some language for things like hunting and scientific reptile collection, things like that. So why don't you go to the next slide? So right now, we're really waiting on some legal guidance. A couple big things here are who will be the agency that the program is housed under. Originally, we were thinking it was going to be the CBDMRCA. It's looking like it will very likely be Desert Recreation District, but we're waiting for our attorneys to get back on that. We're signing a confidentiality agreement with them, and that's been a long process, but we're getting there. A few of the other big questions are, which agencies need to adopt this ordinance? Does it just have to be the agency that houses the program, or does CDCC need to be included on that? What does that look like? What are the public notice period? What's the feedback process? All that kind of stuff. Another big question that we're waiting on, which I think we've got some answers, but it's like, what's the best way to approach private lands? There's not many private lands that we need to be working on, but Friends, they have land. Palm Hills is the best example. So we want to make sure that our rangers are able to write citations and do all the activities that rangers need to be able to do throughout the CBMSHCP boundary. Also working with cities like Desert Hot Springs for illegal dumping. They have very significant penalties that our ordinance certainly would not be able to we wouldn't be able to write a citation for the size that the city of Desert Hot Springs can. So we want to make sure that we have all of the tools available to us. So working with their police department and citation processing to make sure that our rangers can cite against that. And we want to be presenting the ordinance to RMOC next month. So hoping to get all of these outstanding questions solidified so that we can be presenting that ordinance and start making it public here in the next month. So now I'm starting to work on, while I've been waiting for attorney guidance, I've been working a lot on program design. And this is, not the super exciting stuff, but it's writing the policies and procedures. That's like an incident decision tree. So when rangers run into an incident, how do they respond to it? Make sure that that's a consistent response across the board. What sort of certifications do we want to send rangers through? We are wrestling with, do we want rangers to be fully certified peace officers, just like the national parks and state parks? Or do we want rangers to be more similar to like what the county parks would be or the Santa Monica Mountains, which are generalist rangers? They do go through some peace officer training, but not the 700 plus hours that a police officer would go through. Also working with a number of our partners to ensure we have a good hiring pipeline and that we're bringing on individuals that already connected with the land and have been working on the land and want a career taking care of the land here. So building out that and other things like building out our interpretive materials, lots of different partners that we're working with that on, and of course addressing our local issues, so the OHV problems, and making sure that we're approaching them with consideration. And let's see, next slide. The goal is overarching to have four rangers at the end of April of 2026. Two of those rangers will get trained up to be enforcement rangers, so they'll be able to write citations. They'll be going to, you know, their job is going to be going to these illegal dump sites and things like that. And then we'll have two rangers that are just interpretive rangers. So really going out and educating the public, working on behavior change, and that type of work. So that's where we're at now. My contact info is on the next slide if anyone wants to reach out, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Well, it's definitely very needed. So thank you so much for all of the heavy lifting that you're doing, developing this from scratch. And I'm sure once they're on board, it'll be a huge resource for all of us, because certain things, even like OHV activity, have a huge impact on the work that Lynn's team works on and, you know, stuff like that. So kudos on getting everything together.
Yeah, I guess to that point, as I'm building out interpretive materials, you know, a lot of the individuals in this group and a lot of the conversations that's happening, you know, I'd love to have some conversations about those.
Yeah, if I could just add something that's going to be very applicable to a lot of folks here. What we're seeing a lot with the 30 by 30 underpass study is there are a lot of human interactions that are not working out well for the sake of the science that we're trying to get. So the amount of vandalism that we're seeing at cameras or track link boxes, or even the safety of visiting some of these sites, maybe at the wee hours of the night that any of us would want to go see nocturnal based animals or anything like that. So hopefully in regards to what the ARMUC brings to the table as far as watching the critters and all that kind of stuff, hopefully bringing this element of safety to it will allow for extended research into otherwise potentially dangerous situations that have been out there. But cleanup efforts at the dunes and desert hot springs, there might have been an aversion to people who've been here for a while, whereas you could study them before, and then after the cleanup, you might be able to study them again because it's been dangerous to go there, either as an individual or as a group to go study these dunes. So looking forward to the Ranger Initiative, not just to curb the behavior of people who are visiting, but to make those areas safer for new studies that we could potentially do in areas that have been forgotten about.
Agreed.
Luis?
Just in this process, where did you, not contact, but at least so there is an international ranger organization. They even have a meeting every year. I'm pretty sure that they will have a lot of the materials that you developing, how to engage, how to do all those things, not the local policies, but more in the community engagement and things like that.
I've seen quite a few different, well, actually next week I'm going to the Park Ranger Association of California conference. Okay. So going into a lot of that, this is an international group that you're talking about?
Yeah, I can ask our curator of the Mongolia program. She got the rangers from the natural area that we helped to manage in Mongolia go to this conference.
Oh, okay.
So she knows people in there, so I can ask her.
That'd be fantastic.
Because the last one was in, like, Estes Park in Colorado.
Okay, that'd be fantastic. I think you have my contact information.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm curious, how does CDWD handle all types of enforcement issues on your lands?
Yeah, so I mean, we have to go the route through where we have to go through basically the county and through local law enforcement basically to handle any type of dumping issues, and then we just have to. Usually, so that's something we're working through now as it's becoming ever increasing. It used to not be as bad as it is now. And so we're basically, we have to go through public requests for proposals to, you know, get bids of people who are going to do cleanup efforts for us. And then, you know, if there's
people living on land and stuff, then we just have to go through, you know, whatever law enforcement route, depending whether it's county or city or, you know. So that way everyone gets proper notices and stuff to vacate the area.
Yeah. I believe Santa Monica Mountain Conservancy Rangers also sign contracts if folks like yours want to use their services for a fee. So that's something that we're also looking into is if we could make this ranger program available through a paid contract to folks who might need it.
That would definitely be something.
Because you're either paying for the dumping or the prevention.
Yeah, because it's quite difficult. Like, I mean, we definitely would want to work more on the preventative end too, but it's just like this, you know, kind of hit, I think, a lot of us, you know, like when we didn't really expect it in some areas, mm-hmm. now it's starting to happen more and more in those areas where it used to not be an issue.
Yeah, definitely.
The other thing is, so there's like a 602 form that you can sign, and that gives the police the ability to go and enforce law on your land as a private landowner. I say that in quotes because, you know, we are a public entity, but the local police doesn't see us that way. Mm-hmm. It's because we're not a city of this agency or this jurisdiction. They see us as a private landowner. So we have to fill out these forms that expire like every year. And I just recently got a request to re-up some of these forms that we had already signed, and they need the form to be signed for every single APN, which in one form for every APN. And in Desert Hot Springs, I went through GIS and found out how many parcels we have within their city boundaries, and we have 120.
Yeah.
Right. So like I responded, I was like, do we really need to sign 100? And they have to be notarized. So I have
each one.
Yeah. And they'll do it for free if I go to the city hall and sign it in front of them. But then I'm having a stack of 120 papers once a year, right? And this is just for Desert Hot Springs.
It's just wasteful.
So there's definitely a disconnect, I think, between our needs and maybe the member of a general public who only has one piece of land, and that's not a big deal, right? So I'm sure with you guys, right, you guys have plenty of land as well.
Yeah, and I have a lot of it under 602 as well. You know, I don't know how much is exactly, but I know a good portion of it is definitely at least like the, you know, the hazardous stretches that are like a hazard to the public, like the canal and all that's under 602.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if all of our land is. I know we try to get as much as we can.
Yeah. And that would be my strategy, is just sign it for the parcels we know are issue areas and not for the entire 25,000 acres that we currently own. But even then, I mean, Desert Hot Springs alone is 120, and then Thousand Palms is another big issue area, Ondeo Hills. And so I'm like, I'm not going to be signing forms all day long, but
all week.
All week long, yeah. So, yeah, well, sounds like, you know, once we have Wolves Rangers on board, hopefully we'll have an additional resource. So
we'll solve all our problems.
Yes, we're counting on you.
I love that comes expectation.
So I'll just give a quick brief update. On the agenda, I did have fencing and cleanups under 5C. I'll just provide a quick verbal update. We did reach out to CalRecycle at the end of last year. CalRecycle has a program where they use their own trust fund that they get from tipping fees for dumping fees. Mm-hmm. And they provide cleanup services to people who just request it. We did have to go through a site access agreement and let them know that these are our restrictions. You can't bulldoze our land. You have to use existing roads and things like that. But once we got all of that paperwork done, they did come out and do a cleanup site for us in Thousand Palms for free. And that was in partnership actually with CDFW, because we have partnering or adjacent lands to each other, and we had the same issue on both. So we both made this request to CalRecycle, and they came out and cleaned it up for us. They ended up, you know, paying about $40,000 to clean up both of our sites. So
when was that?
That was last month that they did the cleanup.
Wow.
The next day I found a vending machine back out there. Mm-hmm. So you know, but that's a lot easier to clean up, thank you, Brent, than all of the other stuff that was out there. So because this wasn't a former encampment site, so there were needles and there's all kinds of hazardous waste that we couldn't clean up, so CalRecycle did it for us.
Good job.
So last but not least, I do have a quick update on the Low Desert Weed Management Area. We did apply for $120,000 of funding. This is non-competitive funding that the state put aside for all of the WMAs in the state. Ours is the Low Desert WMA. And we submitted the application at the end of February. This is for $40,000 a year for 3 years to do essentially whatever the LDWMA sees as a priority. So with this, in the proposal that Chris McDonald from UCR put together, we would be having Living Desert and Urban Conservation Corps kind of be our boots on the ground for invasive species issues in the Low Desert Weed Management Area. Now, obviously that's something that we already have at CBCC with both of these organizations, but this would expand our scope to non-CBCC land, which would be really helpful. So that is pretty awesome because the LDWMA and the WMAs in general haven't had funding for many years now. So it's really hard to get any of this work done without funding. So all of that invasive or early detection rapid response work that the Living Desert is currently doing, we're hoping can go to good use by expanding it to the larger area. And then we do have an LDWMA field trip coming up. This is scheduled for April 1st, 8 to 12 a.m. to 12 p.m. So just half day. In the last meeting that we had, the group talked about wanting to go out to the Mesa Wind Farm. So this is off of like the Pacific Crest Trail near Whitewater. And this area, you know, I've been there when there was a lot of really tall Sahara mustard. The invasive species are pretty happy there. So we wanted to show that area. Desert tortoise love this area. This is an area where we've surveyed for desert tortoises and have a lot of GPS trackers on them. And there's currently the installation of those giant monopole wind turbines out there. So a lot of stuff going on. And we wanted to show that area with the LDWMA and talk about weed management issues. So if you're interested, please let me know. If you haven't already received a doodle poll or a calendar invite, let me know and I'll share that with you. Any questions on any last items? Okay. Well, I guess with that, we can just want to announce our upcoming meetings. The RMOC is scheduled for April 24th, and the next RMUC is scheduled for June 10th. So a lot of stuff going on. Thank you guys all for not only showing up, but for everything that you guys do out in the Coachella Valley. So we appreciate having you guys here. And with that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.